John Herron for AM 1290.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel and Diane Duva and I are your guests every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11 and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people in Santa Barbara, at Figueroa and Anacapa Streets, and in Montecito's Upper Village, and Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with a personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Hi, Neil. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, and it is really timely that we're doing a show about money, given that the stock market has been all over the place.
It's been a wild day today in the market, that's for sure.
But, you know, part of the reason, or all of the reason why the market has been so crazy the last few days, particularly today, has to do with politics. You know, one of these days we should have a politician on the show.
You know what? You're reading my mind. Look who we have today. It's exciting.
So who do we have? Tell us who we have.
We have our Congressman, Salud Carbajal, representing the 24th District with us today. Thanks for being here, Salud.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you. And we're really looking forward to having a great conversation with our congressman. But before that, let's talk about some of the what I thought, and I think Diane thinks, are one of the more interesting articles in the last couple of days in the financial press. And the first one, you know, this was on Friday in the New York Times, and I was afraid it would be old hat by today, but I guess we didn't have to worry about that. And that is, why has the stock market been dropping? And what the article talks about is the fact that while economic growth in this country has been very strong, it has been weak worldwide. And because it's been weak worldwide, and because 45% of profits in American companies come from out of the country, there is definitely an impact. That plus the fact that because our economy is so hot, wages are beginning to rise, which is good for employees but bad for corporate profits, and the Federal Reserve is raising rates. And as a result of the Federal Reserve raising rates, and we talked about this last week, the P-E ratio for stocks, because the invert of the P-E ratio is the capitalization rate for stocks, that has to reflect the opportunity of getting higher rates in on bonds. That means that the in this case, on September 1st, the inverse of the P-E ratio is 4.77. Today, it's 5.23%. That is, the P-E ratio went down to reflect the fact that interest rates have gone up. And on top of all that, we've got, and this was in Friday's newspaper, the possibility of a bigger trade war with China is still out there. And that's what happened today.
And that's what happened today. Exactly. It was a huge swing. We were up and then we were down, and there was a 900-point swing in today's market. Much of, you know, whether Americans like it or not, we're a global economy. And with a global economy, it matters to slap on a 25% tax is tariff, which is basically a tax to the end consumer. It hurts. It's going to hurt American business.
And the second article I brought in is, I think, really appropriate when we talk about government action. After the 2008 crash, Paul Volcker and a bunch of other people came to the table. And as a result, Congress passed an act to try to improve governance. And one of the things that happened is under Obama, the fiduciary rule was passed,
which I really think was a step forward in the right direction for the entire financial services industry. It's important for the end consumer to realize that their advisor is doing what's in their best interests. And the fact that it was not enacted or basically repealed, and many of the major wirehouses have gone back on their initial ruling saying that, you know, you can't charge commissions, et cetera, et cetera. Here we have this article today, Neil, which is advocating or basically stating a fact that since this fiduciary rule has been left to the wayside by the current administration, annuity sales have gone up. Now, if you know about annuity sales, they pay the broker or the person selling them a very high commission, oftentimes, you know, 2 or 3%, if not all the way up to 10 to 12% of what the amount of money is going into the product. And it's just, it's sad for the end consumer. And I find it to be disheartening for the entire industry, especially those of us who abide by the fiduciary rule, regardless of what the rules and regulations are.
And this may sound esoteric, but it's really important. Most people, I would think the vast majority, don't realize that without the fiduciary rule, your financial advisor, your financial broker does not have to act in your best interest. I mean, it's incredible.
It has to be suitable.
It has to be suitable, but there, you know, if you go to a lawyer or you go to even a real estate agent, they have to act in your best interest, and that means they can't put their commissions in front of your best interest. And by weakening the fiduciary rule, some people said brokers would not act in your best interest. Now, here is the first empirical evidence to support that, and that is that since the fiduciary rule was changed a few months ago, in the April and June period, we've had the highest increase in annuity sales since 2015. $59.5 billion worth of annuities have been sold, and annuities are not necessarily bad, but they're not necessarily good either. The only thing that's consistent about annuities is they pay the broker a very, very high commission, and which you pay that commission, you're kind of locked in. So here's an example of how when you take away the need to be careful as to what is in your client's best interest, sometimes you get, which seems to me like a clear-cut case where they are acting in their own best interest.
I have a new client who just came to me from a major wirehouse. He's had an annuity for the last 15 years. That annuity, he's made exactly $5,000 in the last 15 years.
How much did the broker make?
On $15,000 is what he put into it, and he made five. Given what the markets have done, it's insane.
Right. So the final article I brought in, and it's so interesting because this is, again, by Jason Swigg, one of my favorite writers. He writes for the Wall Street Journal. And last week we brought an article in, and I didn't understand
it. I guess the question for this article, Neil, is do you understand this
No,
one?
I don't understand it completely. But maybe if I talk about it, or maybe someone will call in and tell me what it is that
Perfect.
But I've read it three times, and
right,
I'm still not sure what it says. But basically what Swigg is saying is that the title is What Investors Can Learn from Gamblers' Behavior. And he begins by citing a study from Amsterdam that showed that the Netherlands that showed that 2 out of 3 people prefer to stagger their buying tickets
lottery tickets.
Lottery tickets, because they believe that they have some power if they make decisions that are explicit. It's very strange, but if they did an experiment where they took people who bought a lottery ticket by having the number picked by the machine, and then had another ticket that they actually picked the number, and when asked to sell the ticket before the drawing, they asked for more money for the ticket that they picked the number, even though there's no correlation between having a randomly selected number and picking your own number. People felt confident that they would be able to pick a number. They found that if you told somebody that the odds have gone from 1 in 100 million that you would win to 1 in 100,000, it was not as important if you told someone that the total reward was going from 100,000 to 100 million. As they quoted, your pulse would probably quicken if you thought that the gain was higher rather than the more rational decision was that the probabilities had increased.
Well, I think what this goes back to really is the, you know, behavioral finance. And so what makes investors do the things that they do? Traditional finance is there's no emotion, markets are efficient, there are no, all the forecasts are accurate. What behavioral finance shows is that investors are human. They use imperfect guidelines. They use, you know, emotion, and they're biased in their opinions. And so I think that as an investor, you have to take that into account when you're doing your research. If nothing else, if you're an American, you have the home court kind of bias that you're going to invest more in the U.S. than you are overseas.
But that's why I think I should be able to write off all my psychotherapy fees, because I've seen a therapist for so long, I'm a great investor. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school or even let alone go to college, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter Brooklyn was also a motivation for me to go back to school.
Every day after work, went straight to school, studied hard, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone.
I feel like if I didn't have anyone to push me, I wouldn't even bother to do it. I got one milestone down the drain, and now I got to work on the next.
I see the future is really bright for me.
I feel like it doesn't matter the age, as long as you go back and get it done. The high school diploma is just added to the confidence, and now I feel unstoppable.
No one gets a diploma alone. You have more support than you realize. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending. Since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner. And we can be reached 805-564-1290.
Or you could email us at moneytalk1290@gmail.com. If you're just joining us, we are fortunate to have Congressman Salud Carbajal here in studio with us. Thanks so much for being here with us, Salud.
Thank you, Diane and Neil, for inviting me and the opportunity to chat about some of the issues that I've been working on and some of the issues that are of the utmost importance in Washington that pertain and impact this Central Coast.
Yeah, to us here at home. So what was your experience for the last 2 years? Was it what you expected, you know, as a freshman congressman? You know, I'm sure you had a lot of aha moments over the last 2 years.
Well, certainly when I ran, I never thought I'd be serving under this administration. And I think it's been an erratic, volatile administration, to say the least. But what's been most insightful or something that I didn't expect is the lack of transparency. You know, one party controls the White House and both chambers of Congress. And as such, there's very little incentive to collaborate with the minority party, of which I'm a member of.
And for the moment.
For the moment, at least in the House of Representatives. Maybe, knock on wood. But as a result, there's been very little collaboration. I think this Congress has the record of putting legislation on the floor under a closed rule, which means you can't offer any amendments. You either vote it up or down. You can't even offer amendments to try to make it better so that you
could
vote
for
it.
For it. Right.
So this Congress, is my understanding, has established the world record in Congress in how they go about putting legislation forward. So, for me, that's been the biggest disappointment and the biggest revelation is to see how non-transparent things have been because one party controls both chambers in the White House.
You know, I often say, which you might not like this, but it's always best for me to be divided government because then I feel like it forces people to work together and the outcome usually is more of a centrist view as opposed to leaning one direction or the other.
But Diane, I think your sentiment is pretty typical throughout our country.
I would agree,
I think people prefer for there to be give and take and that both parties in Congress work together to hammer out differences and to find common ground. And regrettably, when you do have just one party controlling everything, you don't have that collaboration or forced collaboration, should I say. So it is a good thing.
Right, exactly. So now, what do you think, you know, there's so much, you know, violence coming off this weekend, you know, and really partisan anger and what have you. People can't go out to eat. They're, you know, elected officials. How do you envision that changing? And or what do you think that people, citizens that are listening today could actually do to make the political climate any better?
Well, first and foremost, I think we need to have this president and politicians on both sides of the aisle to stop espousing hatred, assault, and violence. And that's number one. And number two, I think our constituencies need to hold politicians accountable from not going into that type of rhetoric that only serves to divide us further instead of finding common ground so we could move solutions forward for all our country. And so I think politicians need to do their part, but so do the rest of our citizens and advocacy groups that we have in place throughout the country. Certainly, we shouldn't forget that our democracy is based on debate and discourse and debating different ideas. But we should go back to the day where, despite of the fact of having passionate discourse and arguments, that we didn't foment this hatred that is now pervasive in our political discourse. And that's what's, I think, come to a point where we're extremely polarized and we have this hostile environment that's infiltrated our democracy in a way that we've never seen before.
And if you look at crises that we've had over the last 60 years, no matter what party the president belonged to, that president would get up and try to unite the country. And here we have a president, whatever you think of him, during periods like we've had the last 10 days, there was no attempt to ameliorate the flames that are blazing. And, you know, when there's a fight, someone has to stop it, and that takes real leadership. And I have to interrupt myself because we have a caller.
Oh, fabulous.
Hello, caller. Sarah?
Hi, Sarah.
Hi. So I have a question for Congressman Salud Carbajal.
Great.
Yes.
So I know you're talking about lack of transparency, and we have an election coming up this week. So what would you recommend, or what are some points you think voters should know, or do you have any resources to be educated for this upcoming election?
Well, certainly, I think people need to look to organizations that they trust in putting forward positions on whether it's propositions or folks, individuals that are seeking office that they support. Because there's a lot on the ballot. If you've already looked at your ballot, there are 12 statewide propositions, not to mention a number of local propositions. And individuals on the ballot for governor and a number of statewide positions, as well as all the way down to local school districts. I would say study those, really understand what's important to you, because I think you're going to find positions all over the map. For myself, my priorities have been a number of them, but I will just touch on three of them. One is economic opportunity for the Central Coast, because we know at the end of the day, if you can't get a good job, if you can't provide for your family, if you can't buy food and put food on the table, if you can't pay the rent or mortgage, then talking about other issues is almost meaningless if you can't provide a basic, essential quality of life. Secondly, my second issue is continuing to work on making sure we continue to have good health care and that we stave off efforts and attempts to repeal the Affordable Care Act, so that individuals with pre-existing illnesses could continue having access to health care. Youth can stay on their parents' health insurance. And women could continue having preventative care at the same cost as men, not disadvantaged as they were before. but we certainly need to continue working on bringing down healthcare premium costs and drug costs. And again, I could go on and on and on, but those are just two that we need to work on. In closing, I would just say disaster recovery funding. We've gone through a terrible disaster and tragedy in our community with fires and the Montecito debris flow. And making sure that those resources continue to come to our community so that businesses and individuals could continue to recover is a top priority for me.
And so for
thank you, caller.
Thanks, Sarah. To Sarah's point, do you recommend a resource that people can find out more about the propositions? You know, as there are so many of them, sometimes gets hard to really be up on all the different sides of the issue.
Absolutely. I would say the Independent does a good job, but it all depends on your values and your party. As a Democrat, I will say that there is a good link you can go to at sbdems.org/endorsements/.
Perfect. Thank you for that. And thank you, Sarah, for calling in. So it's funny, before the caller, I went to university in Washington, D.C. And it was interesting because what I found when I was there is when you were out and about, you'd see Democrats and Republicans having dinner together, for instance. Is that still kind of the case now, or it has the political divisiveness pretty much when, although you did say you never have any time when you're back in D.C., do you find yourself making friends with people across the aisle?
Well, I'm lucky. I'm part of a freshman class that I think has really worked hard to stay in touch socially and as a result form good relationships that has lent itself to good bipartisan relationships and work together. For example, I am a good number of my Republican colleagues I've been able to develop relationships with. One in particular, I recently visited his district, Republican Representative Don Bacon in Nebraska, and he's visited my district. And we've actually sponsored a good number of pieces of legislation, whether it's to help our veterans, Gold Star families, Gun Violence Restraining Order Act that I've initiated. He co-sponsored that as well. Helping our firefighters and much, much more. And we've been able to work together. But the reason we don't have that pervasive bipartisan culture in D.C. is for a number of reasons. One, everybody goes home now on the weekends. As soon as session is over,
we go back
to our districts. And that's important because you're able to stay in touch with your constituencies. That's the upshot of it. The downside is that there's no more opportunities for social interaction that leads to those relationships. There's people don't live in Washington with their families anymore. So Republicans and Democrats don't send their children to the same schools. They don't overlap in the PTA. They don't see each other in restaurants. So it's harder to develop the relationships that lead to more bipartisanship.
I have to say, though, the fact that you have forged that relationship with a member of the opposite party that you're in is really refreshing and hopeful as one of your constituents to hear, because that's really how you make progress in any of the issues, is to have a relationship so that you can see each other's points of view, even if you don't agree, but on the off chance that you do, then you can co-sponsor education.
There's also a group called the Problem Solvers Caucus, and I encourage everyone who's listening to Google that, Problem Solvers Caucus. It's a group of 48 Democrats and Republicans, half Democrats, half Republicans, that meet almost weekly, if not 2-3 times a month, to look at areas that we might be able to agree despite our differences and move either proposals or legislation forward. And we've come up with some proposals on healthcare, immigration, infrastructure, just to name a few.
You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Lori Leite from American Riviera Bank. Life is complicated. We can't help you with carpooling the kids to soccer practice or restoring all your files when your laptop crashes. But when it comes to banking, we can make your life much easier. With cutting-edge technology, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks only dream of, we deliver smart banking for smart people. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people. In Santa Barbara at Figueroa and Anacapa, and in Montecito's Upper Village.
They get our kids to school safely. Okay, so walk me through how you got to this answer.
They provide critical support in the classroom.
Chicken sandwich, my favorite.
They keep students nourished, so they're ready to learn.
I'm an outie.
They are there when accidents happen.
Oh, you're gonna need a Band-Aid.
And they keep our schools beautiful.
School bus drivers, custodians, nurses, paraeducators. Just a few of the education support professionals who help schools in California run smoothly every day. This is David Goldberg, Secretary Treasurer of the California Teachers Association. They ensure that our students have a safe ride to school, healthy meals, and a clean environment to learn. So take a moment to say thank you to the ESPs in your school.
A message from the California Teachers Association.
This is the place that talks about Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara's astronomical unit.
Community Matters, Radio Real Estate,
Money Talk,
The Andy Caldwell Show,
Santa Barbara T-Sports Radio Show,
Golf Radio Show,
Community Alert,
Mortgage Matters.
Welcome to the Voices.
Voices.
Voices. Voices of Santa Barbara.
The CEO Report.
Bahar Presents About Education.
Farm to Table Hour.
Welcome to Around the World.
The Jeremiah Show.
History Friday.
The Art and Antiques Radio Show.
Garden Gossip.
Cork and Fork Radio.
Tell Me Your Story.
KZSB, AM 1290.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
So, Salute, when you ran 2 years ago, you highlighted your military service, and thank you for your service. You mentioned previously that you worked on a bill regarding veterans issues. Can you help us here understand it a little bit more and let us know what you've been doing?
Well, I've sponsored a number of pieces of legislation, a number of them bipartisan, to help our veterans. And some of the things that I've been able to achieve for the Central Coast were part of the National Defense Authorization Act, which was one of few bills that moves forward almost every Congress, every year, in a bipartisan way. I serve on the House Armed Services Committee, also known as HASC, and we pass that bill each and every year. And I'm happy to report that we were able to secure $8 million for Veterans Transportation Program changes so that folks here on the Central Coast no longer have to wait for only one bus that makes six stops to take you to Los Angeles when you need to go for certain specialty care appointments.
Oh, okay.
And now we have the resources to help augment the volunteer bus system that we have so that veterans could actually have more buses to get to Los Angeles and have more of their appointments instead of getting there and only having an hour to have one or two appointments. So also the VA phone system. Right now, all phone lines are routed to the Los Angeles clinic or hospital. And it's really hard for them sometimes to get through. And we were able to get $5 million to help change that phone system so that phone calls are now routed to the clinics in our own community when they need to make appointments. So we're trying to streamline things so it's not as bureaucratic.
Gosh, it sounds like, though, that's so much money to just reroute a phone system, doesn't it?
Well, it is, but, you know, that's we have so many challenges in the VA system, and we're trying to tackle them one by one. One is transportation. One's a phone system. Certainly the quality of care is another one in different respects. But the bipartisan bill that I referred to earlier was the Gold Star Families bill that I co-sponsored with Representative Bacon to be able to provide more benefits to widows and children of service members that die during their service and in war. And that was one that I'm very proud of to have co-sponsored with my colleague. Another one is Home of the Brave Act. We know how many veterans we see in our communities that are homeless. And many of them are receiving disability pay. Well, it turns out disability pay is counted for housing programs. So they're disqualified if they slightly make more than the allowable income. And as a result, they're not eligible to receive certain housing opportunities. Well, my bill would not make their disability pay accountable, which would enable them to qualify for housing programs.
Oh, that's great, because it's true. You get $1 over, and then they're no longer eligible for housing, but they fall into that donut hole where then they still can't afford to have housing.
Yes.
That's wonderful.
You know, one of the things that I just don't understand, a country that's this rich, that spends so much money on the military, why do we have to have charities to help our service people who, once they're out of the service? I mean, it seems to me the government should take care of people that risk their life and were injured. The idea that we have private charities are advertising the need to supplement the government is sort of, you know, pretty sad.
Yeah, well, I think that's the irony. You know, people put their lives on the line to fight for our values, our country, our democracy, and at the end of the day, we don't tend to reciprocate how much we value their sacrifice and service to our country. You know, I did, one of the things I didn't mention earlier is we also know the substance abuse issues that are pervasive amongst many of our veterans, especially those that are homeless. And I'm happy to report that I was able to get about $1 million of funding for the Santa Barbara Veterans Treatment Court, which helps many veterans who have substance abuse issues that are going through the court system to have that second chance.
Oh, that's great. Well, it's great to know that someone in Washington is working for our veterans. They definitely deserve it. So switching gears a little bit, with the national economy as robust as it is at the moment, or at least for now, State Street here in Santa Barbara is still suffering. You know, there are a ton of vacancies. You have many different people in many different facets of life here in Santa Barbara offering up suggestions and ideas of how to try to help revitalize downtown Santa Barbara. Do you have any ideas? Maybe someone from City Council is listening.
Well, I think local governments have a lot of leeway in coming up with incentives or strategies to help provide for the revitalization of any area. What I've been doing at the federal level is making sure that through the SBA and other legislation that we are providing more capital and financing opportunities for small businesses so that they could have access to the capital to grow their businesses and to get enterprises off the ground or to expand their enterprises. And that's sort of what I've been working on. Certainly, local governments could actually provide a number of incentives, and I think they're trying, but somehow we haven't been as successful locally to be able to fill those vacancies.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's fair. Well, it's good to know that you're working on, you know, small business administration and expansion, because that is the economic engine of our economy in general. And, you know, we spend so much time, especially on our show, talking about corporate America, which is the big companies, but really it's the little companies, the self-employment, that are creating jobs at more of a rapid pace than anyone
Absolutely.
Else.
Small businesses are the backbone of our economy. And so that's never lost on me. Also, even our healthcare system, as much as the Affordable Care Act did a lot of good, we still need to work to make it more affordable so that businesses could manage the health care that they provide to their employees at a more affordable rate. So certainly a lot more can be done.
Right.
What about the flip side of that question? You know, we talk about what Santa Barbara can do. What's going on, particularly besides health care, in Washington that really we in Santa Barbara should be looking at as it would affect us directly?
Well, keep in mind that when it comes to health care, or are you talking
anything,
about the homeless?
Anything.
Well, there's a lot of bills. For instance, there's a safety net that helps many of our vulnerable populations. The Farm Bill. The Farm Bill is in conference right now between the Senate and the House. The House attempted and passed a House bill, a Farm Bill, that took $24 billion out of it in an unprecedented way that would prevent from SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance, to many needy families throughout the United States. As such, it unfortunately became a partisan bill because Democrats were not willing to support it. We're hoping that the Senate comes forward with a proposal that actually equalizes that. But that's just one issue. Climate change. You know, in Washington, there seems to be we're moving in a direction where you have an administration that doesn't believe in climate change and has done everything to reverse all that we've done to reduce emissions throughout our country. The California waiver that the EPA gave us years ago this administration is doing everything possible to not renew that waiver, which would stifle our ability to regulate our own emissions via our vehicles here in the state of California. Immigration. There's been a few bipartisan bills that are in the House that could address the DACA issue that we are dealing with since this president undid the Obama executive order. But yet this president and the leadership in Congress, Republican leadership, have not allowed those bills to move forward to the floor. So there are bills from immigration, healthcare, education, tax law that gave 83% of the benefit to the top wealthiest corporations and individuals in our country and created a $2 trillion deficit, addition to our deficit. All those issues affect us here locally.
Yeah, and so we have those states that are typically blue that have high amounts of spending for social services, have higher taxes, and the new tax bill has made so many of the deductions for state and local taxes and mortgage payments, interest payments, non-deductible. So in a way, it was a behind-the-scenes way of getting even with the blue states. And the idea, I think, partly is to make it financially difficult to support these social welfare programs, which is just, in my view, just plain mean.
And quite frankly, it's important to remember that most of these blue states are donor states. So despite the challenges we have, whether it be homeless or housing needs, at the end of the day, we're major donor states to the rest of the United States. So California pays its share and then some to a lot of the red states for a number of things. So it's important to keep that in mind.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
These days, the way to get your benefit payment is electronically. Whether you receive Social Security or SSI, you can depend on your payment arriving on time, every time. If you don't already have electronic payments set up, there are a lot of reasons to do so. For one, you'll save time and money for yourself and the government. Second, fewer paper checks, envelopes, stamps, and less fuel mean less waste and pollution, and that's good for the environment. Not to mention that electronic payments show up in your account no matter what. Skip the bank line and go electronic. Learn more about electronic payments at www.socialsecurity.gov/deposit. That web address again is www.socialsecurity.gov/deposit.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by American Riviera Bank, making your life easier with cutting-edge technology. Mobile deposits, free use of every ATM machine in the country, and a level of service other banks can only dream about. Do you realize, Lou, that if you had an American Riviera Bank card, you could go and get cash in Washington, D.C. without paying $3?
Wow, I was unaware of that. It's good to know.
It is good to know.
So talking a little bit more on issues, I know as a financial planner, I often get clients that sit in my office and say, so Diane, what do you think about Social Security? Do you think, you know, I'm 66. I just got it this morning. I'm 66.
You look pretty good for 66.
Do you think, this is my client.
Oh, sorry.
Do you think they're, you know, Washington's going to change Social Security, and can I no longer plan on that? Because regardless of what people say, Social Security really is that foundation of your retirement, and to have a certain amount of money coming in every month is invaluable, and people have paid into it. So what are you seeing in Washington? Do you, you know, it doesn't help people's comfort level when you see the Republican leadership talking about taking away Social Security or all entitlement programs, and that's how the deficit's going to be resolved. What can you say to your constituents of making them feel a little bit more comfortable with Social Security?
Well, first, I take issue with my Republican colleagues calling Medicare and Social Security entitlement programs. These are insurance programs that everybody has paid into so that when they reach a certain age, they have access to these benefits. It's their benefits that they have paid into or for in advance. And all of a sudden, my Republican colleagues are trying to take their money away. It's not the government's money. It's their money. And like I said earlier, now that they created a $2 million additional price tag to our deficit, they now are targeting those trust funds that Americans have paid into as a way of balancing the budget. So that's what's really sad and what's happening. But these programs have been paid into. And the reason, for instance, Social Security, the reason it's there's a trust fund timeline that it will start eroding or not being able to pay its fiduciary obligations is because over the years there's been an expansion of benefits, meaning over the years initially it was just individuals that paid into it. But then don't forget, if an individual, they paid into it for their own pension, but we've amended things so we could provide pensions to children of those that are deceased. We've expanded benefits and the type of recipients that could receive those benefits. So now we need to make sure that we re-examine the formula. Right now, people pay into Social Security up to, I believe, $127,000 of income. Certainly, you could allow people to continue paying at a higher level of income. You could even start having people continue to contribute for those that make $500,000 or more. There's various ways that you can ensure that the dwindling trust fund is shored up in a way that this program just continues to exist and to pay out its obligations fully.
So you don't envision anything going away in the short term for those people in their 60s, that things probably won't change before they start.
I will tell you, if there's one way to
upset voters,
to upset voters and change this Congress and presidency in a heartbeat, is to start messing with seniors, Social Security, and Medicare. And they're already listening that this effort is underway, and it's not a scare tactic. Mr. McConnell in the Senate is already making no bones about it, that they're going to come after raiding those trust funds. So that's something that is already being said. And again, it's not me making it up. It's what's being said, and something everybody should really be listening and taking to heart.
So we talk about, people sometimes voting against their own best interest. And there was an article in the New York Times yesterday about the impact that some of the fracking loosening regulations have had on Wyoming. And, Wyoming is as red a state as you can get. And yet the people there, you know, live off the land. They love the environment that permits them to fish, to hunt. People, you know, go on vacation there, which is a huge part of their economy. Do you think that people are going to wake up as to how policies that they, for whatever reason, have agreed to vote for people who support them, like ignoring global warming, are going to start waking up because it affects them?
Locals is politics are all local. When it starts hitting you locally, your land, your air, your water, your livelihood, all of a sudden you've woken up because it's not it's very tangible. And I think what's happening with this administration giving away our public lands to corporations, allowing corporations to frack in our backyards, threatening our water supplies, our aquifers, our air supply. Corporations got an exemption from the Clean Drinking Water Act to not have to disclose the chemicals that they put into the ground when they do fracking. People are concerned, and they don't trust these corporations because they're scared that it's going to threaten their economic livelihoods by contaminating their aquifers, devaluing their lands, polluting our air. So people are very, very concerned. I think you are seeing an awakening of the American public throughout the Midwest where there is a lot of fracking going on.
You forgot killing our children.
Absolutely.
Like, well, when you look at clean water, it's a public
health issue. It's a public health issue.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Today we decided to walk to school. The light counted. 15, 14,
41, 31, I mean 13.
We took a left on Carroll Street. Danny's smart, but he gets distracted.
I realized
he forgot his homework.
I hope he doesn't have another bad day at school.
When you can see learning and attention issues from their side, you can be on their side. That's why there's Understood.org, a free resource for the parents of the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues. Go from misunderstanding to Understood.org. Brought to you by Understood and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
So, Salud, as we're reading the news and looking at immigration and the caravan that's headed to the California southern border, what do you see as being some solutions for that, or how do you feel about the administration's response of sending troops to the border?
Well, certainly, like any country, we should secure our borders. That's not the issue. The issue is, how do we address with these individuals wanting to come to our country, seeking asylum, and others that may not be seeking asylum, they just want to come to our country. And certainly, we should have an orderly process by which we review and assess and evaluate any asylum situation. And if they qualify based under the laws that we have, certainly we need to live up to what our laws have stipulated. If they don't qualify, then they need to be sent back.
So the issue I have is that there are still children separated from their mothers and fathers, and How is the U.S. going to handle that? As the all reports have said, many are women and children headed towards the southern border.
Well, certainly that's going to be continue to be a challenge. We saw what this administration did with families and children in the past, and that's without having a plan, without having any sense of what to do, they just started separating children from their families, which we've never done before, and especially in such a chaotic way. And it wasn't until the courts and the American public roared back and said, that's not the America we are. We will have an orderly, humane process by which we deal with individuals seeking asylum, and if they come as families and children, to deal with the entire family. Certainly, you know, our country provides aid to countries throughout the world, and we should do that and continue to do that. But as part of our aid to Latin America, we should really make sure we work with those governments to make sure that they're investing in their infrastructure, economic opportunities, so that they're lifting up their people and providing economic opportunities to their residents so that they don't, one, have a need to come to this country, and two, we also need to hold them accountable for all the violence and persecution going on, which lead many of these families to want to flee. Any of us would take our families to a safe place if our families were in any under any threat of violence. And I think many of those families perhaps are. And that's why they're making their way here. Again, but we need to make sure we have an orderly process by which families aren't separated from their children. And we're vetting anyone and who wants to seek asylum.
So, you know, as we're coming to the end of the hour and, you know, thank you for being here. But let's talk a little bit about your priorities for the next 2 years. What do you see? What do you envision tackling, and what's on your agenda?
Well, first and foremost, continue to look at ways to augment economic opportunities here on the Central Coast. Anything that could help us spur more jobs, help our small businesses have access to capital so that they could grow and prosper and bring about more jobs in our area. That's number one for me. And when we think about what's happening in the northern part of the district, where we have a nuclear power plant that's going to close and displace 1,500 very well-paid jobs, that's going to have a huge impact on that economy. And I've already introduced legislation that will allow for and incentivize businesses to invest in renewable energy and thereby creating a lot of new jobs that will help with the displacement of those jobs. So one, how do we create more economic opportunities for families, working middle-class families here on the Central Coast is my number one priority. Number two is healthcare. Healthcare has come a long way with the Affordable Care Act, provided healthcare to over 20 million Americans, but it's still too expensive. Part of why it's too expensive, let's call it what it is this administration, when it failed to repeal the Affordable Care Act, has gone a great lengths to do everything possible to sabotage the Affordable Care Act, which means prices are going up. But it's this administration's doing, not the Affordable Care Act. We still need to do everything possible to bring down premium costs and prescription drug costs. So that's the second issue, healthcare. And the third issue is to continue to make sure that we are bringing the resources to our community to help with those that are recovering from the disaster. Many individuals and businesses, some of the businesses on State Street and other places, have still not recovered completely. And we need to make sure they have the access to capital and the support services to be able to prosper.
Well, thank you so much, Salud, for not only being here today, but for all of the work that you have been doing for us for years, and certainly for the last 2 years, and for the next 2 years and many more to come. And thank you for listening. You've been listening to Money Talk, and we'll see you next week.
It's